Peace, love, and light, everybody. We are back, Minds Like Minds podcast, and I'm your host, RL Melpika.
I'm the co-host, Chef Definition.
And once again, got another special guest with us, activist, a coach, and founder of Public Love Enterprises, Laura Hartley. How are you doing today?
I am doing very well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming. We're super excited to talk about everything you have going on. Me and Chef actually talked before the show, just kind of prepping a little bit, and there's a lot to cover. So,
okay, exciting.
Yeah, but first and foremost, how you been? How's your day going? How's your month going?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, I am in Sydney, Australia. So for anybody who's listening and hearing the accent, so it's a beautiful day. We're just heading into summer. I'm enjoying my last few weeks here before I actually move to Montreal in Canada.
Okay.
And I figure I'm not going to see summer for a little while. So time to enjoy it.
Right. Okay. So what's the time difference there from America?
Well, it's like midday here, like 12 p.m. So it's okay. Kind of perfect, actually.
All right. So, but is it Thursday for you guys or is it Wednesday?
Thursday.
Okay, so you're ahead of us. Okay, so you're like, yes. So we're like time traveling. We're going in the future right now, talking to you.
Exactly. Whole new world.
Midday Thursday.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, cool. Well, you know, with all the things you got going on, obviously, you know, being an activist and a coach and being the founder of Public Love Enterprises, I like, you know, we both like for our listeners to get to know like how you got to this point. So give us kind of like a summary, you know, of how you got to this point, what made you do what you do, and ultimately become the activist and coach that you are today.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, I love this question. And it's also like such a big question.
Right.
You know, I tend to think that, you know, my love and my work really revolves around this one question, which is, you know, how do we create a more beautiful life and a more beautiful world? And, you know, that kind of then intersects into different areas. I'm super passionate about personal development and spirituality. And, you know, I grew up in this household that was deeply, deeply infused with that kind of work. My mother was a life coach like 30 years ago. She started one of the first life coach training schools in Australia. And so like my earliest memories are like listening to Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or Tony Robbins and these very kind of new age thinkers. And it really instilled in me this feeling of like, you know, we have agency. We can choose a direction in our lives that, a desire to kind of really explore the inner world, you know, what is it that happens in our psyches, in our hearts, in our souls? But then, you know, as I grew up, I also became really passionate about the world. I fell in love with the world. And I realized that there's a lot of problems. You know, there's the climate crisis. There's ongoing racial injustice and wealth inequality that's only increasing. And, you know, we couldn't just think our way out of these problems as individuals. The answers weren't always there in some of those teachings or the books that I had when I was younger. And so I became an activist. You know, I got very involved with different movements, different groups, looking at what does it mean to make change in the world. And really, both of those areas have led to what I do now, which is the inner work we need to do for social change. Mm. What is it that needs to change within us, within our hearts, within our minds to show up for, to create and to generate a better world.
Wow. That's a lot there.
Right on. Like,
was there any experience that you had growing up or anything that kind of led you to this activist role? Like, did you see anything like personally? Did something happen or anything?
You know, I'm going to be honest. No, In a sense, yes. You know, I grew up with my own personal experiences of depression, anxiety, you know, really kind of crippling mental health issues as an adolescent. Okay. And part of my, and I had a very long healing from this, you know, but part of my healing was really actually discovering the world around me, as silly as that kind of sounds.
Right.
It was actually discovering that there was this entire world outside of myself at 17 and actually really coming to love it. you know, and then infused by my experiences traveling and then my experiences in living in different parts of the world, really just kind of brought to my attention the impacts that we have as people, the ongoing injustice that we see around us, things that I've experienced, things that so many of us have experienced, and the desire, how can we make it better? So there's no one specific event, but certainly lots of ties kind of leading me in that direction.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So it was more like a interest and passion than as opposed to like being inspired by something that's happened, you know, coming up or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, I'm passionate about how do we make change? And that applies on so many levels. You know, how do we do it as individuals in our own lives?
Right.
You know, in what we're experiencing in our relationships, in, you know, our sense of thriving or flourishing. And how do we make change in our communities, in our nations, in our governments? So the same question is always there. It just has lots of different framings.
Right, right, right. And you grew up in Australia?
I did, yes. Okay. Sydney, Australia.
Wow. I heard Australia is beautiful.
It is a gorgeous country. you know, I'm excited to leave for a bit. You know, okay. I have a bit of a travel bug. I've been in this country now for a few years and I'm good to kind of leave again, but it is stunning. So for natural beauty, absolutely worth a visit.
Chef, have you been there?
Perth. Perth in Hobart, Tasmania in the military.
Oh and my gosh.
I had a ball.
Yeah.
I mean,
Perth and Hobart are both beautiful.
Yeah. I vividly remember this. The scenery was beautiful. The people were beautiful. We were embraced, like, you know, all around Australia. Wherever we went, we were embraced with a lot of love.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
So, yeah.
So, Laura, you said you're planning on moving to Canada. I'm guessing you visited there, obviously. You wouldn't just move on a whim, right?
No, actually, I haven't.
What?
I am just moving on a whim.
Oh, my goodness.
You are moving on a whim?
Wow.
Yes. I've done this before. I moved to Dublin a few years ago, and I'd never been there either. So, you know, sometimes you need a change, and why not? You know, I can learn French, I'm sure. I'm trying. It's very challenging. Planning to move to Montreal. But give it a go. Try something new. What's the worst that could happen?
I'm sorry. That is so amazing, right?
Yes.
It's like so awe-inspiring. Like, it's like, okay, I'm gonna uproot myself, put myself somewhere totally different. And I'm gonna flourish.
I love it.
Like that's just kind of like, I mean, you know, pardon my Francais, that's pretty ballsy. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, that's like, I'm not gonna lie, it is kind of terrifying. I did call some friends the other night and I was just like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, come on guys, please remind me that this is the right thing. And thankfully they're awesome. And they like gave me a million reasons why it is the right decision. But yeah, it's emotional.
Now,
it's
exciting. Do you have friends or landlines that are there already?
No.
Nobody.
I don't know anybody in Montreal. Nobody.
This is amazing.
No, I know like one person in Toronto. So you know that's kind of helpful, but also not. But yeah.
Wow.
So, okay, and I don't mean to be really prime, but like, okay, so like. I'm sure you have a beautiful life in Sydney, but what made you just decide, like, you know what? I'm gonna go
halfway around the world.
I think I've been a little bit bored, I think is the honest answer. Like Sydney's great. It's a wonderful city. I love it. It's, you know, I'll always have love for this city, but I do thrive being somewhere new, and there's opportunities to meet new people and discover new places. And I like that. Mm. It's exciting. And so I feel like I need more possibility in my life again and more change, you know, to kind of fit with this conversation.
Yeah.
And give it a go. You can always move back.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
My fun, the awesome.
Wow. Really, I need it. I'm gonna take some of that energy. Right. I'm going to take some of that energy you're emitting right now and apply it, because like me and my wife, we've been talking about, you know, possibly uprooting, you know, we're just talking about leaving the state, not the country. You know, and that's like a big deal. Exactly. At the end of the day, it's like, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just those conditioned and instilled fears and insecurities about change that make people overthink things like what I'm talking about. So that what you're doing is like, is beautiful. It really is beautiful. And I'm not sugarcoating or being hyperbolic or anything. Like, that is absolutely amazing. That's cool.
Thank you. You know, I think it's so easy to see the things that you're going to lose when you're making big changes or thinking about them. You can always see like, well, I'm going to lose this community or these friends or this job or whatever it will be, but you can't see the things that you're going to gain. Not until you do it. And that's why it's hard, because you don't have that vision there. And it takes that kind of leap of faith to trust that there is something that you're going to gain. And that there is something on the other side to kind of move towards it, I think.
I can just dig that. Like even being in the military, being from small town Texas and moving to the coast, and then going on Westpac and traveling. And it really did open my eyes to a lot of things and how other people live on different stuff, on a different side of the world, you know? And I'm really grateful that I got that experience. And it's always been something that in my foundation that I know that I've always wanted to learn about different cultures, especially like being a chef. I always want to learn about how different cultures eat.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Like,
you know, I want to see some food. I want to see some cooking. I just want to get up in there like that.
I think I've also always been inspired by different cultures and wanted to understand them better. I think it's this idea that there's more than one way to be human, that there's more than one way to live. And this is one of the things that I love about travel and that I have certainly missed over the last few years with the pandemic, is this just seeing a different way to view the world and a different way to be in it. And that's what travel offers. And certainly like food as well, is such a different relationship to food and different styles and spices and flavors. And they all offer us something new.
Yes. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, cool. Cool. Why Canada?
Honest answer, it was easy to get a visa. Okay. So that's the reason for Canada as well. My girlfriend is British, so she's not quite ready to go back to the UK.
Yeah.
And Brexit sadly limited our European options. Yes. So we thought, you know what? Let's try Canada. I have never lived in North America. I love the landscape, the beauty. I'm so curious to kind of explore it more. So we thought we'd give it a go.
Nice. Have you been to America before? United States of America, I should say. See, that's the entitled American in me thinking that the only America is United States of America.
I did actually lose you guys for a second there. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem.
A slight freeze, but
I was asking if you've ever been to the United States of America.
I have, yes. Not for a while now, but I've been a few times and I love it. It's great. You know, it's so funny because there are so many similarities between the US and Australia, or the US and the UK. Like, they're all English speaking countries. There's a lot of similarities in like culture, and there are some amazing just differences and that I love, that are so great to see. I love America. Everything feels so big. Everything feels so loud. And it's very different. It's awesome.
When you're here, where do you
I've been a bit all over, to be honest. Probably I've been to New York a few times in the East Coast, but you know, I've been to Arizona and around Sedona and Phoenix, and then California, Portland. So a bit all over the country, but I definitely would like to explore more.
Nice. You got to come to Texas. Come check us out here in Texas.
That's true. I've never been to Texas, and I would love that. I've never been anywhere south, so that's on my list.
Everything is bigger in Texas. So
everything is bigger.
So you thought the rest of America was big. Wait till you come to Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Yeah.
Bring your app.
Bring what?
Your appetite.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, let me ask you this. You know, I'm on your website, and you have a lot of different things. You know, programs, coaching. You have your podcast there as well. Is Public Love Enterprises kind of like the umbrella which everything underneath falls into?
Okay. It is, yes. Perfect. So I run an online school for change makers. Again, it's basically what is the inner work that we need to do to really show up for the world. So I look at things like burnout and internalized capitalism, you know, the ways that we have internalized the systems around us, and they show up in perfectionism, in that sense of time scarcity, that there's just never enough time, that hustle culture that we all have. We look at this idea of what would entrepreneurship beyond capitalism look like? How do we make it ethical? How do we remove this whole scarcity tactics that we love to use so much? And how do we start to look at what a better form of leadership is? You know, how do we know what's ours to do in the world? How do we inspire others? What's our relationship to power? These are all big questions. They all fall across many different programs. But throughout the year, we offer free workshops, longer form courses, and then one-to-one coaching as well.
Wow, awesome. Now you have these five principles that I'm looking at that you guys operate on pretty much underneath. So I wanted to kind of go through some of these with you and just kind of get your take on it. And then obviously we'll have some takes as well. But the first one, number one, which I love, is inner to outer to inner. Kind of explain that to everybody.
Yeah, it's that, you know, change doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, it's not just one dimensional. And a lot of us who are working for outer change, who are working to kind of change the world around us, unless we also challenge the ways that we are participating in that world, that we have internalized that world, we will somehow recreate it. You know, this is fundamentally what ends up happening, is we'll change a policy, we'll change a piece of legislation, but then it's always up for debate again because we've never changed the underlying conditions within us as a society that is creating that situation. You see that with the climate crisis a lot. We will not move through the climate crisis just by switching to renewables. We need them, absolutely, now, yesterday. But, you know, fundamentally, the crisis is also about a disconnection from humans in the natural world, you know, from us and our place in it. So looking at this role of how are we embodying change from within us, then moving it into the outside world, and then moving that new beautiful vision in the outside back into us as well. So it's a revolving space that we're working with.
In Australia, do you guys deal with a lot of political division as well?
Less so than the US, I would say, but increasingly so, yes. We certainly have a conservative party that moves further to the right. We have a news media that is 70% owned by Murdoch. So you do see this division there.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky I live in a beautiful, lovely little bubble, but right, recognizing that it's increasing, it is the case.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And what this line, I'm going to read it here for everybody because we talked about this before the show started. I just love everything this says. We know that we are the system. Systems, whether patriarchy, capitalism, white supremacy, or other, were created by humans, perpetuated by humans, and play out their impact out through humans. As we work to change the system out there, we also work to change the conditions within us that consciously or unconsciously perpetuate and internalize the system. That is heavy.
That's some heavy shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is actually, I love that you read that, because that is inner to outer to inner. Yeah. That is exactly what it's about. How have we internalized these systems? How do we perpetuate them? And how do we get free?
Yes.
Because every single one of us has been taught them.
Right. Condition, you know, we've all been conditioned. We've all been birthed and born into a world that's already like the blueprint's already been laid out. So things that we think are natural and are just supposed to be are not necessarily supposed to be.
I always loved one of the principles of Extinction Rebellion, which is a climate movement, is, you know, we are all products of a toxic system. No one individual is to blame. And recognizing that that's the foundation, that blaming and shaming isn't what creates change, because every single one of us to differing degrees has been born into this. And it's on each and every one of us to try to free ourselves and then free others.
Right. And that's one thing me and Chef have multiple debates and conversations about this, especially in talking about race relations in America. And that's something that Chef is extremely passionate about. And my thing is, it's kind of like the last part of that is like, we have to fix ourselves within us before we could do anything out there. Like, we can march all we want. We can, you know, push for this person to get elected and hope that this policy changes. But then in 4 years, it's going to change back. That's just the reality of the systems, right? Reality of the cycle. But until we fix ourselves, like, none of that's going to matter, you know, because we're all stuck in this systemic bubble, like you said, societal bubble, to where we feel like we have to use application to fix it, as opposed to looking within. Because once we fix, if we all fix ourselves, that's going to ultimately be better for the whole collective consciousness of the world. That's just how it
is. Yeah. And this is, you know, when you're looking at transformation or you're looking at change, and it's quite easy to like tweak the system, you know, but ultimately you're still just within the system. Right. It's still doing the same function. You know, how do we actually transform it? That's a totally different conversation. And I think that requires a lot of spiritual work, a lot of inner work for each of us to really do.
100%.
I definitely can agree with that too. I mean, kind of like, you know, on the flip side of that, it's like, it's definitely easier to move people who move in fear to control the masses. You know, all kinds of tools of deception have been being used, you know, and for, in order for us to fix ourselves, which is what we should be doing, it kind of goes against the grain of everything that they've been forcing down our throat to just really to kind of like almost be sheeple, you know what I'm saying? Or just rocks or just robots or just different animations and fall in line with the system, the matrix, and just like, I don't know, what are we working? What are we doing? Living to work, living to die, living to work a little bit, then die.
Pretty much. But, you know, I think this is that interesting kind of point about power, you know, that we, you know, well, a lot of what you're talking there is this paradigm of like power over or domination. And it is the easiest for us to default to. It is the most common that we see around us. It's why we assume it is the only mode of power that there is. But in a sense, it's also one of the weaker forms of power, because it is fundamentally, it's reliant on somebody else's behavior to determine, you know, what your action will be or what your feeling will be. But understanding that, you know, that type of power is really what starts to lead us towards violence, starts to lead us towards force, towards coercion, you know, none of that being what we want. We need to also explore other types of power. What is shared power? What is power between us as a collective? Yeah, what is embodied power that is like deeply seated within ourselves, you know, within what we know to be true? And these are different spaces, but we're not taught them. Mm. And they're not as obvious.
It is, It's definitely obvious.
It's like just the way the systems are set up, you know, it's to separate ourselves from our power, to where we have to rely on these systems to automatically guide us through life. And I think that's one of the biggest disconnects with people. And it's not necessarily their fault. You know, we're all on a different journey. We're all on a different path. Some people realize it later in life than earlier in life. But, you know, when you talk about patriarchy and capitalism, white supremacy, I mean, those are heavy, heavy indoctrinated systems that really, if you look at, I mean, we go outside right now and you turn on the TV or whatever, like, they impact everything. And I don't know how heavy capitalism is in Australia, but like, and I know, I'm pretty sure the world's economy is struggling right now, just with everything that's happened with, you know, the pandemic and whatnot.
Russia, Ukraine, pandemic.
Oh, exactly. It's like bingo, man. You know, there's so much shit going on right now. But it's just important to understand that, like, you know, you can separate yourself from that. And once you start to realize your own individual power, like, that's when you realize that this shit is limitless. Like, what you can do is limitless. Like what you've created, Laura, you know, this online school and helping people who want to make change. That's big, you know, because a lot of people that want to make change and want to be entrepreneurs and whatnot, they feel like they're on their own because the system isn't built to help them. It's built to help the person that's going to work, you know, 50 to 70 hours a week till they're 65 and then, you know, get their little Social Security and then die. Like, that's what the system is built to do. It's not built for entrepreneurs. Regardless if they want to tell you about free enterprise and capitalism, it's still not, I mean, yeah, it's there, but they're not putting you, like, when you go to school, they're not trying to put you down that path.
No, absolutely not. God, I wish they were. Like, but absolutely. Like, you know, these systems are very invested in their own survival. They're very invested in their own continuing existence. And so, you know, capitalism in particular has this tremendous ability to kind of just consume in a way or eat up anything that tries to challenge it. Mm-hmm. You see it with like the wellness movement or with spiritual movements that have become very capitalist in recent years of, you know, it's no longer about, you know, meditation for, you know, understanding your inner world or making different decisions. You know, it's, you know, you've got to buy this app or buy this gratitude journal or buy these crystals. And, you know, like the whole thing is like, I'm going to go on this like $10,000 retreat so I can get to know myself. And there's nothing wrong with any of these things in and of themselves. Right. You know, I meditate, I teach meditation. I would love to run a retreat one day, but there is when it's just become another form of consumerism.
Yes.
And that's just the way capitalism works, is it kind of eats it back up. And the only way that we can start to really challenge it on the outside, and I'm so passionate about challenging it because, you know, it is the leading driver of the climate crisis, is to start to notice the ways that it shows up in us. You know, what are the ways that I feel there's never enough time? You know, like, thank God it's Friday, or the week, how was your weekend? Like, yeah, it was good. It's never long enough. You know how it is. Or, you know, we've got a lot to fit into this meeting today. We're just going to like power through. Like, we're just like going to eat into lunch a little bit. So this idea that we're constantly time scarce is not something that's true. It's not something that's inherent to being human. It's inherent to capitalism. Mm-hmm. And these are the little spaces that we can really challenge within ourselves that then help us to see the wider picture on the outside and help us to look at, you know, entrepreneurialism and look at new ventures that we can do on our own terms.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. 100%.
That's dope.
Number two is vision and seed. This talks about, let's see, we must be bold and ambitious enough to vision a more beautiful world, to believe in the vision we can feel in our hearts, but not yet see with our eyes. Speak on that.
Oh gosh, I do love my writing sometimes. That's very good. Thank you.
Doesn't it sound good when someone else narrates it for you?
It does. I need this. Really, you know, it's so easy to fight the old world and it's so easy to see all the problems. It is a lot harder to vision actively the future that we want. I remember reading somewhere, and I don't know who said this, and if anybody knows, like, please tell me. You know, that it's easier for us to imagine the apocalypse, like the literal end of the world, than it is to imagine the end of capitalism. Mm. Like, that's the way it's kind of been indoctrinated into us. We can so easily picture the demise of the world, and yet it's so hard for us to picture a world that was actually based on justice, that didn't have wars, that, you know, had better skills for conflict resolution. Why is this so hard? So visioning and seeding is part of this work. What is our vision? Let's get clear on it. Let's really imagine in detail what it would look like in our communities, in our organizations, in our families. And then seeding is really about living it out in real life. What are our values? How are we going to act on them? How do we live them out in our thoughts, our words, our actions? So that it's really about deep change at the core of who we are.
It's deep. Chef, you got anything on that?
Heavy, man. I don't have anything on it. I'm just really trying to take it all in and just really process it. Cause it's like, you know, you just really kind of dropping gems, you know, it's like, damn. Okay. Well,
guys think about a more beautiful world, what do you guys think about? What do you see? If you were to think about visioning justice, visioning a regenerative world, what would be different?
I think, go ahead. No, Chef, you go. I've been talking all day.
I think one thing that would be different would be the presence of love. I think the presence of love and humanity would be first and foremost, because there really wouldn't be any reason for us to preach hate and separatism and discrimination and caste systems and all of those things, because as human fellow human beings, we all just to love each other, you know, and that's how we want to you know, take humanity into the future.
Yeah. I love that. So, you know, kind of, you know, if we're picturing, okay, well, there'd be more love in the world, then it's like, okay, well, what actually is love? You know, because a lot of us sometimes have this idea that love is passive, or that, you know, love doesn't make people uncomfortable. But, you know, how do you define love? What does love look like in public spaces for you?
You know, in public spaces for me, like love looks like beauty. You know, they say it's in the eye of the beholder. Love looks like right now, there's a lot of fall, autumn, browns, reds, blues, sunsets, things of that nature. That's love to me. To see an old couple holding hands walking down the street, that's love. To see a mother and her child, or a father and a child, to see someone walking their dog, you know what I'm saying? These are all expressions of love to me, how I see it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and
I
then
love that.
Unity. You know what I'm saying? Just complete unity. I mean, I guess it's kind of like it seems like it's such a far-fetched notion that we can genuinely love our brother man or our sister man. You know what I'm saying? And it's really not.
It's not. And it is hard. Like, you know, there is human relationships are complicated. But like, I love this because, you know, when you're saying, well, love is beauty, like then we're kind of looking at, well, where do we take that? Again, we could easily look at, well, how do I beautify my community? What would beauty in my community or my streets look like? What would beauty in my relationships look like? And how do I start to create that? And then what does beauty do, or what does love do when there's conflict? You know, to me, you know, love has accountability. You know, there are still consequences. There's still
love takes a stand.
Love takes a stand. It doesn't roll down, but love also doesn't punish. You know, love doesn't dominate.
Right.
And so
right.
These are complexities that we get to, we get to explore within us as to, well, what's it going to mean in this situation? And then how would I act from this value here today? And what could I do with this value and understanding that love is beauty in my community this year? What would be different if I could just make this street a little bit more beautiful? What would I create? Would I make some plants? Would I do some art murals? Would I work with local families to kind of look at, you know, how are we using this street? Can we create a better section for kids? Can we make the park a little bit nicer? Whatever it might be. But these are ways that we can take something that's a little bit ephemeral and a little bit part of our vision and start to seed it into the world.
Wow. Like for me, love is all about intention. Like it doesn't matter what the situation is. Like if we have an argument, if we are holding somebody accountable, if we are competing, right? It's all about the intention. Like if the intention is love based, then it's ultimately for the betterment of everything. But if the intention is power, greed, you know, the demise of another, or divisive, anything of those nature, that intention is goes against love, ultimately. So in everything we do, public spaces and within systems, within governments, within just everyday life, if the intention is love, ultimately, then, you know, it doesn't matter what's happening. The intention is in the right place. It's for the betterment of the community or the collective consciousness or whatever you want to call it. So that's how I see it with love.
Yeah. Like one of the places that I was first inspired, you know, as to how we take our values into public spaces or into public spheres was on a trip to Bhutan about 6 years ago now. So Bhutan is like this tiny country between India and China in the middle of the Himalayas. And it's got like a population of like 800,000 or something. It's absolutely tiny. But they have this development philosophy called gross national happiness. And basically they say, well, you know, the measurement of GDP of our country is kind of arbitrary. You know, it doesn't actually reflect public well-being. So instead they measure the gross national happiness of their people. And they do that, you know, quite substantially through a whole series of surveys where they measure time use, environmental standards, living standards, education, healthcare, and use that to kind of form a robust picture. And then their policies are kind of driven through this platform as well, as to, is this actually contributing to the overall happiness of the people, or is it diminishing? You know, is it perhaps great for time use and living standards, but terrible for the environment? And if not, well, you know, this puzzle isn't complete here. So how are we going to get a well-rounded image? So to me, this is an example of love. You know, it's about intention, it's about care, and it's about how do we infuse our public spaces, our values, and really use love as a public good. And that's a powerful thing, I think.
That is. Yeah. What did you say? You said gross national happiness?
Yes, gross national happiness.
Bhutan, you said?
Yes, Bhutan.
I have to definitely look up, because that's amazing. Like that is, they are, that like, is amazing.
You know, Bhutan is not a perfect country by any means, but they're I found this philosophy to be, you know, incredibly enlightening, particularly coming from countries like ours, you know, which operate on a very different principle. Yeah. You know, it's just really about the bottom line. It's just about the economy growing with little consideration to, is it actually any good that it's growing? Are any of us actually happy?
Well, I mean, I don't think
many of us are.
If you think about it, like you talked about countries like yours and ours and, you know, being what they consider first world countries and whatnot. And like a lot of this stuff, like the quote unquote, I mean, freedoms and opportunities and things that we have are mostly, you know, financially based, are mostly material things. Things that truly don't matter. And when you go to a place like Bhutan or you go to any, you know, small villages or whatever, and you see happy people, you realize that, like, you realize what it's truly about. Like, yeah, maybe they have a simple life, but why is that a bad thing? Why are we like applauding and supporting the rat race of stress and struggle and all these different things that ultimately don't make us feel good? We just feel like we've just been indoctrinated to think that we have to do them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right. Because we have such a fear of not fitting in society. So that kind of drives us to become cogs, you know what I'm saying? To be pieces of the chain, to be pieces of the great machine.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, exactly. We have a strong belief of, you know, I'll be happy when syndrome in this society as well. Like, we're all taught that, you know, if we just grow up and we just do the right thing and we, you know, finish school and do the right uni course and get the right job and get the next promotion and get married and then have kids, and we're eventually going to reach this place. Mm-hmm. And this place is where you'll be happy. And it doesn't work like that. There is no place. It doesn't exist. Like, it's the work that you do here and now, day to day, in following what's true for you, in, you know, living your values, in understanding your emotions and what you're feeling, that's really about happiness. I think, you know, where the cultural myths of ours are quite misguided.
Yeah, it's the whole Kanye West, wait till I get my money right. Just wait till I get my money right. Things are going to change.
Imagine having that much money and still just like, you know, I'll be happy when.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing. I mean, like, if you live that way, if that's kind of like your philosophy, then you're never going to reach where you want to get, because you're never grateful for the moment you're in. You know, you got to stay present with it. Like,
because you're never there. I mean, this is what visioning and seeding is about. Something.
Always.
Yeah. We can't create that world when it's always somewhere in the distance.
Exactly.
Like, we can't suffer enough to make the world better. Like, I really believe the world becomes better, and this includes our activism and everything through our flourishing, through our thriving. And we need to look at that as a public good, as something that is important, not just for us, but for the world as well, and to really prioritize it.
Yeah. Yep. So if you have everyone out there, like if you have that vision of what you want the world to be, make it today. What can you do to make that vision today? Now, can you create the whole picture today? No, but you can do something towards that picture. And then eventually that picture will be, you know, in your essence.
Yes. What, like 100% as somebody who procrastinated for years, do something today, no matter how small.
Right, right. That's always been my motto with everything I do, with my branding and everything. It's like, I just got to do one. I'm doing at least one thing today, at least one every day.
I love that.
Interconnection, right? See, we are not separate, but part of a deep interconnected thread with all life. Our work as change makers includes honoring this connection and disentangling ourselves from the mindsets of separation and domination. Speak on that.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, our countries were kind of founded on this separation and disconnection and the idea of domination. You know, the whole impact of colonialism and, you know, of Europeans spreading abroad to the rest of the world was, you know, one, we are separate from the natural world. So we are completely separate and above every other species that exists, every other piece of land, you know, that humans are the pinnacle of this earth's achievement. And then of course that men are superior to women, that white people are superior to people of color, and all of this laid the grounds for colonialism and the paradigms that we see playing out today. So coming back to this idea that actually we're not individuals. We are in a sense, we all know that, but this hyper-individualistic notion that we have is really toxic. It is what is leading to increasing inequality. It is what is leading to increasing violence, to increasing unhappiness. I mean, even the rising rates of depression you see in the world can be linked back to loneliness, can be linked back to this feeling of, I don't have a community. I'm not connected to anything. There's a reason in the UK now, one of the things that I think, certainly in some progressive circles, for like mental health issues, like they're prescribing like time in nature, time in the natural world. Because we're a part of it. Mm. And as long as we are seeing ourselves as separate, you know, we're going to continue to have a lot of these kind of struggles that we're seeing come up just in different forms, because we need to heal that connection, that rift.
Yeah. And which, you know, which is a huge thing when it comes to climate crisis, because if you're not connected with the world, then why would you give a fuck about the world? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like people act like it's their stage. You know, they're putting on a play, they're putting on a show or something, and all the world is a stage. That's it. No, it's not a stage.
It's fine. You know, we protected this little patch of ocean here, this patch of forest, you know, there's a national park, you know, but it's even then, the whole idea is it only has value because we can use it as a national park. It doesn't have value in and of itself for existing.
Right.
And right. This is, again, it's a very Western notion. And there's a lot, I think there's centuries and probably millennia of like thinking there and patterns there that will need to be undone.
Oh, I agree. Oh, do I fucking agree with that shit?
Yeah. I mean,
like, done like a motherfucker. Like, yeah, burn that shit to the ground. Undone.
Yeah.
Look, the nature is amazing. The earth is amazing. Like it provides everything we need, and unfortunately the powers and majority of the people in this world take it for granted. And
I think, again, though, this is a cultural thing. You know, the way I kind of look at, you know, patriarchy, white supremacy, anything to do with supremacy culture, you know, where we dominate one idea over another, and there's many different forms that it takes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, the way I'm going to describe it is like, I'm trying to figure out how to say it, but I think it's like a virus of the mind almost, you know, it is just the way that we think. Mm-hmm. And that way of thinking is very, very prevalent and spreads very, very easily across the world. Particularly, you know, once you've had, you know, countries and cultures that have been impacted by centuries of oppression and other injustices, you know, it's very difficult for other ways of being human, other ways of relating to the natural world to be as obvious, to be seen. And it, you know, this idea of separation is not inherent to being human. There are many cultures, many indigenous cultures across the world who believe they were part of the natural world, who saw themselves as part of the interconnection. Mm-hmm. It is our culture, it is Western culture, the one that we live in, that really is founded on this idea that we are separate. Mm-hmm. And it has had that for such a long time, and it plays into so much of what we do, that to even challenge it is disruptive. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
Oof. Heavy.
It is hard to challenge. I mean, very few and far between people have, you know, well, we all really know what happens to the people who buck the system or challenge the machine. You know, they end up getting silenced or dead.
Yeah. And so, their credibility is attacked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, they get certain regulations and other stronghold tactics put on them to not be able to take it to the next level. Now, there are people that are doing some amazing work too. It's just harder. It's a harder path because it goes against the grain. And if the grain is embedded into society, then that's going to continue to be the case. But it's people like us that have to continue doing what we're doing, because I say this all the time, like at the end of the day, there's more of us than them. Like as far as like policymakers and the powers that control most of, you know, what the world is, there's more of us than them. So as long as, you know, we start waking up and start spreading this information to everyone, then, you know, we'll start to make some serious strides.
And the work that we do ourselves on ourselves as well, like, you know, when I'm talking about this idea of domination and separation, you know, these are big concepts I'm kind of relating it back to. But, you know, I've certainly internalized this. There are times when, you know, I notice like the idea that my needs are absolutely more important, or an inherent kind of classist belief there that I, you know, uncover that's something I've been raised with. And it's like, oh, okay, here it is again. How am I going to challenge this now here? You know, right. What would it look like to, again, embed my values here, to challenge this? So it is a day-to-day thing, even in our relationships, you know, when we have these kind of power struggles between people, you know, in our organizations, where we have this idea of kind of dominating or controlling somebody as leadership. How are we going to challenge this here in the way that it's showing up for us now? Because that is where the work is. So it didn't lie 500 years ago. I wish it did. It lies now in every single day.
For sure. Now, vocation. All right. Let's talk about vocation. Let's see here. To live our vocation is to listen to the callings that arise deep within each of us, to trust the emergent, and to bring forth what arises at the intersection of our purpose and passion. You have to break that one down, because that one's good.
You know, vocation has such a spiritual notion to it. I think, you know, it probably was like, I think it's used like in Christianity a lot to like have a vocation, you have a calling to like join the priesthood or something. And, right. You know, for me, vocation, it's really those little voices. It's our callings. Every single one of us, regardless of what we believe, regardless of our spiritual practice, has callings. You know, these little voices that say, yeah, but you know, this thing that you've been like thinking about for like 5 years now that you still haven't done, but you keep coming back to, like that, you know, it's that gut feeling, that intuition. And all of that really is leading us to our vocation, to our purpose. You know, where are the things that matter to us? Where are the things that excite us, that we love to kind of talk about? Or the things that break our heart, you know, the things that create real emotion in us? That is where we are meant to be working. You know, we need activists, we need people to take to the streets, we need people at protests, yes, but we also need people doing what is theirs to do. And that will be revolutionizing banking, revolutionizing farming, revolutionizing energy use, you know, doing the work in their communities to create more cohesion, to create social healing. You know, every single one of us has something, and it's not all going to be the same. So it's finding what is ours in this moment. That is really what vocation is about.
100%. Like, yeah, go ahead, Chef.
No, I'm just saying, I like it. I like what you were saying. I like.
It reminded me of a quote that I saw a couple of days ago. Like, I think it was like yesterday. It was actually yesterday, I think. About like when, like you're being called to do something, like the universe is going to keep calling you. You know, it's not going to stop. And that's when you know that this is something you're supposed to do. Like, you know, we all get, you know, different, you know, ideas that pop in our head and whatnot. But if one just keeps coming at you and you're seeing it in different forms, like that's a sign. Those are signs that this is where you're supposed to go with it. And you talking about vocation and all that, that's kind of how I took it. You know, and the callings that arise deep within each of us. Take that. That's special. That's a gift, you know, and you got to roll with it.
And you know, a lot of the time, like, I'll be honest, they lead us somewhere that's a little bit crazier, a little bit batshit. And you're like, why the fuck am I supposed to get here? Sorry, excuse my language. But like, it's really, but you know, when you actually follow it, you find there's usually a reason of where you're meant to be going. But it's hard because sometimes, you know, those little voices ask us to challenge the people around us to take a path that's different to most people that we know. And that's scary. You know, I noticed that with moving overseas, as we were talking about, like, would my family like love me to stay here and like settle down and like get a nice house that's, you know, like 30 minutes away and, you know, go over to dinner once a fortnight or something? God, yes. But like, is that what I want? Not really, not right now. So, you know, it's following what is true for us, even if it's going to disappoint other people, even if it's going to upset them, and finding what is ours.
For sure. For sure. And at the same time, like letting go of some of that control, as far as like trying to control, you know, the calling itself. Like sometimes, mm-hmm. like you talked about doing things that are uncomfortable, you know, if you have a calling or a passion or a vision or a dream that you want to manifest, it's not always going to play out the way you think it is. So don't try to control the process. Like, just roll with it. Just go with it. And you know, make it fluid in a way. And, you know, it'll end up coming to fruition. It's just sometimes we let that ego get in the way and we want to control every step of the process and then wonder why we're going in a circle. You know what I'm saying?
And this is me sometimes. Yes.
I think it's all of us. That's a constant battle that we all deal with.
Because we
want to control the narrative sometimes, but sometimes you just got to let it flow and let it be.
Oh, that's, you know, that's actually a really good reminder for me personally today. So like, thank you for that. But like, it's so true. We need to like, just trust the journey and it will unfold how it is supposed to. And we can't control every aspect.
That's, you know, like me talking earlier, me and my wife, we've talked about moving to Colorado because every time we go there, it feels right. It feels like us, right? So instead of focusing our energy on that, we're focusing on every other reason why we shouldn't go there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All the things that would stop us, instead of just thinking about, look, that's the feeling we get where we feel happy. Like we talked about that gross national happiness. We would have a high gross national happiness there.
Look, you're smiling just talking about it as well. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's that battle between, you know, the analytical mind and, you know, the left, right brain, all that shit. So.
Absolutely.
All right. Muscular, adventurous, and public love. All right. Let's see. Love is the most perilous and pleasurable of social technologies. Love is the most reliable muscle of human transformation. And love is more muscle than pathos. This is from Krista Tippett. And love is the source of whole and radical transformation.
Yeah. So I, you know, the reason I named my business Public Love Enterprises was actually inspired by that speech of Krista Tippett's, you know, where the idea that we use love as a public good. And, you know, I kind of loved what Chef was saying just before about like, you know, well, what would actually be in a better world? Well, it'll be love. And I agree, because we see love as like so naive and so like weak and, you know, only in a romantic context or a parental context. And, you know, I think there's so much more that love can be. You know, there's, I don't ask me to speak about this, but I remember like hearing like there's, I think it was the Greeks and certainly other languages have had multiple words for love to express different forms of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important distinction. So what I would like is to see, you know, love as the foundation of what we're doing in the world, of our policies, of our decisions, of our interactions with each other. What would it look like at a community, at a national and at an international level to infuse it with love? I'm going to be called naive by so many people just saying that, and that's okay. But as I was saying, it comes back to this, okay, well, how do we make this realistic? How do we make it real? And that's what this school is about. It's what this work is about. We do the work in ourselves, and then we look to apply it to the world.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's deep.
That's deep, yeah. Like, another thing I think of when I think of love is, like, love doesn't have labels. I mean, I think that one of the biggest parts of the indoctrination that and conditioning that we grow up with is that there's differences between all of us. Like everything is different. Everything has to have a label. You're Republican or Democrat, you're Black, you're white, you're brown, you're, you know, this or that, you know what I'm saying? And those labels just like antonyms to love, right? The antithesis of love. And I think once we start to break down, I don't know how to do that. That's one thing that I don't know how to do. I mean, it starts with the youth, obviously, and us, all three of us as individuals, we can pass that on to the youth, of course. And hopefully, you know, they can start to unlearn a lot quicker than it took us to unlearn. But once we eliminate the labels, I mean, I think that gets rid of separatism, that gets rid of a lot of the prejudices, racism, all that shit, social separation.
Yeah, and it's how we use the labels too. Like, are we seeing the labels as like division, or are we seeing them as a way to actually also embrace and describe who we are and to embrace a particular culture or a particular thing that's meaningful to us? So, you know, I think there is a place for some labels. Not all labels are bad, but it is the division that we've done with them that we're needing to really break down. You know, the idea that because, and this is so much easier said than done, like freely admit that, right. But like, you know, like that somebody votes differently, that somebody votes conservatively or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. you know, that I can't love them or I can't care for them or I can't have a relationship with them, you know, that's a problem there. You know, we can both have our respective beliefs and in a sense our respective labels, but it doesn't have to mean division.
Right.
Easier said than done. And there is so much nuance and complexity in that by circumstance. But I do agree with what you're saying, that we need to start to look at who are we as whole people and whole communities.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different layers to it. I mean, tribalism is a huge part of it. I mean, we're born like into families that have traditions and, you know, we get associated and attached to these different tribal labels, you know, and, you know, we're kind of taught the shortcomings of our people or whatever the case may be. So all of a sudden we look towards whoever that was who was creating those shortcomings as the enemy or bad or different. And, you know, it's a whole complex system. But I mean, it starts with the mindset, you know, and it starts with you. So you work on you first, you get yourself there, and that's going to emanate and spread out to your circle. And I've told Chef this all the time. Like, when you become the best version of yourself, all of a sudden you see how that energy emanates around you, because when you're the best version of yourself, that means you're the best father, or you're a better father, which means your kids are going to grow up and be better people. They'll be better employees. They'll be better brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, fathers. And that just continues to emanate. And that residual effect is ultimately how we create a better world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And this is one of the things, you know, as an activist, I, you know, when I started this work, I was seeing this huge burnout rate that was happening. And, you know, this idea that we just needed to just keep going and just, you know, push through and, you know, it's fine. Like, we'll be able to rest eventually or something, or when we just have more numbers or something. And there was this, you know, the word struggle becomes synonymous with change as well. But I really believe that, you know, we cannot create a more beautiful world, a more just world, more regenerative world from the place of our struggle. You know, we create it from our thriving, from our flourishing. And so exactly what you're saying, when you are living your best life and when you're feeling your best, you are going to be the best father. You are going to be the best partner. You're going to be the best friend because you have the resources, you have the energy, you have the mindset, the love, the compassion to show up for the people and the way that you want to. And as activists and as change makers, that's something that, you know, we all need to learn as well. How do we resource ourselves so that we can do this work?
Beautiful, beautiful. Everybody watching on Twitch, if you have any questions for Laura, feel free to post them now, or any questions for us, or just want to comment, feel free to do it. Got a couple people watching right now. Laura, how does somebody get a hold of you? Like, let them know your website, your social handles, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so website is laurahartley.com. You can also find me on Instagram at laura.h.hartley. I'm also on LinkedIn, if that's your space. I'm new there. It's a new world. But those are definitely the best places, Instagram and or my website. Awesome. You can also take a quiz that helps you find your best direction in change making, and some resources on burnout as well.
Awesome. Also, and kind of like, what's the process? Like, if somebody's interested, they're interested in joining or whatnot. How does that process go?
Yeah, so definitely I'd say like sign up to the mailing list, because you'll be the first to hear when new workshops and courses come out. If you're interested in one-on-one coaching, just reach out and we can have a, chat about, what it is that you're wanting one-on-one help for and how we could work together. And then in the new year, once I'm kind of settled in Canada, I'll be starting a cultural wayfinding course, which will be a 5-month course that's really about the inner leadership qualities. So exactly what we've been talking about today. How do we get free from internalized capitalism, from internalized patriarchy? How do we explore our relationship to power and get out of the domination mindset and explore different methods of it? And then how do we know what's ours and go into the world with that? So we'll be really supporting changemakers over 5 months to get free and to do their thing.
Awesome. So for all you changemakers and entrepreneurs out there, or honestly, and I think this is for everybody personally, but specifically that, we'll have all of Laura's information in the description of the podcast as well. So make sure you check out all those links. So let's do some final words. Laura, give a final few words for everybody out there listening and watching.
I mean, thank you for listening, everybody, and thank you for this conversation. Like, RL and Chef, this is awesome. Like, I've really enjoyed this, and you've given me some really good reminders myself not to control things, and to, and also to kind of trust the journey. So thank you to everyone listening, and, find your thing. The world needs what you have to offer, so this is not the time to hold back anymore. There is no time. Find your thing and go for it.
Chef, what you got for the people?
Thank you for watching. Thank you for being a part of this. This has been so mind-blowing. So many tidbits, so many just jewels been dropped. It's like, it's a beautiful process, processing all of this beauty, nothing but love and respect.
That's what's up. That's what's up. And yeah, thank you everybody who's watching live. If you're listening to the podcast, make sure you check out the video version on our streaming platform, AkashaFlix. AkashaFlix, we've got over 285 different videos, free thinking, true seeking, spiritual, metaphysical, mindful, anything under the conscious realm is in AkashaFlix. And your support just helps us expand that reach so we can reach the minds and hearts, mind, body, and spirit of more people. So we appreciate everyone who has supported us on there. Laura, this has been fantastic. Such an enlightening conversation. We would love to have you back on in the future, especially when you're in Canada. You won't even be that far away. We might even be in the same time zone. I don't know.
Exactly. No, thank you guys. I'd love to come back on, and I love your show. So thank you again.
Yes. For sure. All right. We are out, everybody. Thank you for watching. And we'll be back. We're here every Wednesday. Peace.